Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, September 26th. I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom, filling in for Brian, who is off today. We'll start the week with some Monday morning politics and a couple of deadlines that are looming in the nation's capital. First, a deadline to fund the government. Congress has until Saturday, October 1st, to pass a spending bill that keeps the government open. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has spent the past week or so hammering out the details, including negotiations with West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who'd like to include some provisions for energy permitting. Not a huge surprise, given his ties to the energy sector in his home state. We'll hear more about that proposed provision and whether it can get enough support to pass a 60-vote threshold in the Senate. And the other deadline is, of course, the midterms. We don't know yet what Congress will look like next year, but we do know that it'll look very different, particularly for the January 6th committee, which lost its only two Republican members, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, to primary challengers. Not only that, but if Republicans retake the House, it could spell the end of the committee's legal authorities to issue subpoenas, among other things. So that's not a certain deadline, right? But because Democrats could control the House, we're just not sure yet. So what do they do in the meantime? The first hearing since the summer is scheduled for this Wednesday at 1 in the afternoon. We'll hear what they have in store for that hearing and for the remainder of the current congressional term. Plus, we'll get an update on some of those midterm races and what the polling says about what Congress could look like next year and some other topics for this Monday morning politics conversation. Joining me now to cover all of that is Susan Page, the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today and the author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and the Lessons of Power. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bridget, it's great to be with you.
Susan, we got a lot to cover here, so let's dive in first with that spending bill. One of those deadlines that I mentioned is October 1st, the deadline for Congress to fund the government. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, along with the caucus of Senate Democrats, have been working out some deal they plan to unveil tomorrow and vote on tomorrow night after sundown because of the Jewish holiday. Can you tell us about the main sticking points Democrats have been haggling over the last few days and weeks?
Yes, Bridget. Well, we've been here before, right? The fiscal cliff that we are always seem to be standing on the edge of. As you said, the government runs out of money on Saturday. But actually, I think that legislative leaders on both sides are pretty optimistic that they have a deal that will pass, that will fund the government until mid-December, that will include aid for Ukraine, some money for Jackson, Mississippi. Of course, they've been struggling with water problems, or money to resettle Afghan refugees. What we don't know whether it will include is that provision that you mentioned from Joe Manchin on energy permitting. He has interest in making energy permitting an easier process. He especially has in mind a natural gas pipeline that runs through West Virginia, the Mountain Valley pipeline. He got a promise from Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, that it'd be included on a must-vote provision like the continuing resolution. And Schumer says he's going to follow through on that, but there's every expectation that if it falls short, if the Manchin proposal cannot get the 60 votes to overcome a filibuster, that Schumer will ditch it and they'll just go ahead and pass the other elements of this spending bill.
And it seems like West Virginia Democrat Senator Joe Manchin comes up in a lot of these conversations when there is a close vote. And you mentioned his particular interest in some of the energy provisions because of the projects in his state. But can you talk a little bit about his ties to the energy sector?
Yes. Well, of course, he financially benefits from the energy sector in West Virginia. So does his family. It's also a big part of the West Virginia economy and even of the West Virginia culture. So it is not new that he is standing up for a fossil fuel, for coal, for those kinds of energy provisions. And it's something that's put him at odds with much of the rest of the Democratic caucus. But because the Senate has, as we all know, only 50 Democrats, has given him enormous power in pushing through some provisions that he's interested in. Now, he was also a crucial element in getting through that big bill, the successor to the Build Back Better bill, which included the biggest climate change provisions in U.S. history. So Democrats give him some credit for that. But he has often been an outlier on these issues when it comes to energy in the Democratic Party.
So if this provision that he's pushing does fail, are there any other procedural hurdles that this spending bill will have to overcome before it's passed?
There are always procedural hurdles when when you're talking about Congress. And that's one reason that Cindy Hoyer, the House Democratic Majority Leader, has warned members they may not get out on time on Friday. The Democrats members of Congress in both parties hope that Friday will be their last day so they can go home and campaign, those who are running for re-election. So, yes, they've built in some time. They are prepared to stay through the weekend if they need to. But it is, you know, sometimes we get to this point and it's hard to see how they're going to pull a rabbit out of a hat and get the funding bill through. And this time looks, you know, knock on wood for the federal government, looks like a path that is not entirely smooth, but where you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel.
So if things don't go as planned for Schumer in the Senate, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said she'll lean on something called same-day authority in order to move a House version of the spending bill. Can you tell us what that looks like and what would that mean in terms of making that October 1st deadline?
You know, that's a great question, Bridget, and I'm not sure what the answer is. Do you know?
I don't know. So you and
I'm sorry. You know, one thing I'll say, just I don't know about same day authority and how it would work in this case. I will say that House rules give the Speaker of the House a lot of power that nobody in the Senate holds. The Senate is much more a body where the minority party holds some power. We see House leaders have things like the magic minute, where if Nancy Pelosi stands up and starts to speak for one, no one can stop her until she stops. You may remember she filibustered on an immigration proposal a couple years ago, much to the annoyance of Republicans. And I assume same-day authority is something like that, but I don't actually know.
Well, I didn't mean to give you a pop question. Our very helpful producers gave it to me, so we will... when we find out the answer, I'll share it so that we both are a little bit smarter on that particular issue. But in terms
Bridget, what I assume, Bridget, I know that you have such a smart audience that I bet people on Twitter are already informing us about what same day authority is. And so I look forward to being educated about it.
You and me both, Susan. Let's talk for a minute about the fear of a government shutdown. You know, it always, as you mentioned, it seems to loom in these situations. I think you know the pulse of Washington. How realistic is it this time? And are there other potential outcomes here that could stay something like that?
Yeah, I think it is likely that they will get some kind of funding bill through by Saturday, by October 1st. They're reasonably optimistic that they're going to get a real appropriations bill through in the middle of December, which means that you're not doing this kind of step-by-step governing funding by continuing resolution. So there are lots of conflicts in Washington where you don't see any resolution. You know, you think about immigration, for instance, that seems to defy any resolution on the horizon. But this is not a case where this is not the worst fiscal situation that we've seen. And people are, I think a lot of members of Congress are pretty focused not on this funding bill that they expect to get through. They're very focused on November 8th and the midterm election and what that will mean for all of them looking at next year.
Susan, let's talk a little bit about the former president Certainly, we know these January 6th investigations are drumming up, you know, more documents that could be part of a criminal referral. But that's not the only investigation going on. There's the Justice Department's investigation into the classified documents he brought to Mar-a-Lago after leaving the White House. And then there's this newly announced lawsuit against the Trump Organization from New York Attorney General Tish James. And yet the former president's out there doing rallies again. He's reportedly been inching closer to outright embracing QAnon conspiracy theories and whipping up outrage. It's kind of a throwback, actually. So what does it mean that he can be out there spreading this potentially dangerous misinformation amid all of these efforts to hold him accountable?
You know, it's amazing. First of all, he's got so many legal challenges that you really need a scorecard to keep track of them. There are about a half a dozen separate legal actions that he is facing and has had to defend himself against. And yet, as you said, he continues to be the face of the Republican Party. He continues to be the most dominant figure in the GOP. He has redefined the Republican Party in his image. That's one reason people like Liz Cheney are no longer welcome in the GOP. And this movement to more openly embrace QAnon is something that has been pretty chilling. I don't know if you saw the footage of the last rally he did, where they played a song that is like a song that represents the QAnon movement. And then many people in the audience pointed one finger up in the air, their index finger up in the air, which is a QAnon sign. I had to actually Google it when I saw the audience doing that. I didn't know what it meant. So QAnon, of course, a really bizarre conspiracy theory about our politics. The idea that the leading figure in one of our two major parties is embracing it, retweeting a picture of himself, a mocked up picture of himself with a Q on his lapel, is just pretty jaw dropping.
Agreed. And that brings us back to some of the other investigations and who will be the audience for some of the work of the January 6th committee. I saw that committee member Zoe Lofgren of California explained that the reason Wednesday's hearing would be at 1 p.m. is in part because Fox News won't carry the hearings if they're in primetime. But so far, they have carried the hearings when they are midday. Why do you think it's important? And I think everything we just talked about before probably speaks to that. But why is it so important that the committee reach Fox's audience?
Well, that is the core of the communications vehicle for many conservatives, for many Republicans, for many Trump supporters, and for many of those who have doubts about the legitimacy of the 2020 election. So no more important group to at least hear what the committee is finding out about what went on. I think that is a really smart move by the committee, because, you know, the committee can't overturn the election. They can't convince everyone involved, can't stop Donald Trump from running again. But the committee can inform Americans about what went on, and especially Americans who have doubts about whether there was fraud, which there was not. There was not widespread fraud in the election. Or Americans who have doubts about whether there was really violence on January 6th, or was it just a political protest that went a little sour? Clearly, it was a really violent assault and insurrection and attack on the Capitol. That is, I think, the greatest value of the January 6th committee. And the fact that they are making an effort to reach Fox viewers makes all the sense in the world.
And just last question on this topic. One of the committee's tasks has been to come up with recommendations for making sure a January 6th style insurrection isn't possible going forward. Are the recommendations that they've issued so far any?
Well, we know that there's a lot of support for the Electoral Reform Act, which would make it clear that the vice president cannot overturn the results the way that Donald Trump encouraged his vice president Mike Pence to do on January 6th. Now, Pence refused to do that, but the law as now drafted doesn't make it entirely clear what the authority of the vice president is. So this is a proposal that has bipartisan support. It looks like it's going to have filibuster-proof support in the U.S. Senate. So that is one important piece of legislation that has a good chance of being enacted.
Let's shift gears again, spend a couple minutes talking about the midterms. I'm curious what races you're watching and treating as bellwethers for the midterms and how they might change the shape of Congress overall.
Well, there's, we're looking at the House and the Senate, right? It's going to be it'd be historic for the Democrats to hold control of the House, but the control of the Senate is really up for grabs. 50-50 mm-hmm. Senate now. You've got a series that Republicans at one point 6 months ago thought they were going to win a majority in the Senate. They're no longer sure. Democrats aren't really sure they're going to hold a majority, but they think there's a good chance they can. And the races we're watching there would be Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, maybe especially Pennsylvania, which is the Democrats' best hope to pick up a Republican seat. That's been a really interesting race between Dr. Oz and John Fetterman, and pretty close to home for you in
absolutely.
New York.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the more interesting and, you know, at times quite entertaining races to watch in our region. It's the Brian
well,
Laird. Go ahead.
Neither one of them are really typical politicians, really. Really, I mean, Dr. Oz, you know, is a kind of a TV celebrity, and John Fetterman, who wears a hoodie all the time and is talking about his tattoos. So voters have a choice of candidates that are not like the standard issue.
And let's go to Alicia in Queens. Alicia, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning. I was just wondering if any of these Republicans, these moderate Republicans who lost their primaries, thought about doing what Lisa Murkowski did in Alaska and mounting a robust write-in campaign. She won her Senate seat with a write-in campaign. So it gives moderate Republicans an alternative. You know, I know they don't want to vote for a Democrat, but it gives them an alternative aside from these QAnon people that are running for office.
Yeah. Well, Alicia, thanks very much for your call. You know, and Lisa Murkowski won with a write-in, and she had to get people to spell her name right on the ballot. Like, they wouldn't accept a ballot that said Lisa Murkowski with a letter wrong. So that was an incredible political achievement when she did that in the face of opposition within her own party. But it's a tough road to go to run as an independent. To run as a write-in, it is a difficult thing to do. Lisa Murkowski had a name that was very familiar to Alaskans. So we have not seen, I'm trying to think if even a single one of these Republicans who have lost have gone that route, and I can't think of one who has. I get the feeling that Republicans who are never Trumpers, who think of themselves as conservative Republicans but disagree with following former President Trump, you get the feeling that some of them want to go third party, form a third party. Some of them are hoping that this will pass, right? That there'll be a new wave in the Republican Party at some point. Donald Trump will no longer be the leader. Maybe it will return to old principles. It's been a discouraging time to be an anti-Trump Republican, that's for sure.
We're going to have to leave it there for today with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today and author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons on Power. Susan, thank you so much for covering so much ground with us today.
Thank you, Bridget. It was my pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.